Welcome to episode 240 of Troubadours and Rock on Tours, with yours truly, EW Conundrum Demure. On this week's program, we have as our featured guest the incomparable Nellie Mackay, songwriter, singer, actress, and brilliantly subversive citizen. We talk mainly about society and politics. We get philosophical. We get political. We talk about art. And we have some fun in the process. I think you will too. A wonderful conversation with Nellie Mackay on this week's episode. We also have a fantastic essay written by our resident essayist, Dr. Michael Pavese, a.k.a. Uncle Cesare, and that essay is titled The Hotel. We have an EW essay by yours truly titled Courage. We also have a poem titled Creature. And all of this, as is always the case, is interspersed, ensconced, inspired, informed, infused by, with, several great tunes. Let's get to it. Episode 240 of Troubadours and Rock on Tours.
Must be some kind of way out of here, say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine, plowman dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. Hey. No reason to get excited.
courage, bareback tattoo, chest swagger. My Lord, give me another lager. I cannot stop thinking about how significantly the culture I've been born into has misguided me, and how I have been so susceptible. Even with this awareness, it is extremely hard to change the sense of normalcy regarding happiness, success, reward, my fears, an assortment of perceived paths to choose, the limiting duality too, are all so ingrained. It, together, is the fabric, the nuance, the substance of my psyche, my psychology, suppressing in many ways, or at least strongly influencing, the ways of my physiology. How can one break away and change without being somewhat lost and estranged for a time? So sublime is this prospect. I feel, I think, I need to change my ways, my approach, the manner in which I live my life, so that I may cultivate more love, understanding, courage, kindness, beauty, and hope. How about you? Do you think we should? Do you think we could?
All right, my next guest is here with a song from her latest album entitled Get Away From Me. Please welcome, along with the Max Weinberg 7, Nellie Mackay.
Jimmy, you know my love is true. I am. Davy, you know I love only you. And Mitchie, oh, you give meaning to every day. And Nathan, oh, hold on, I got something to say. Oh, they need their women, but women don't need their men. Ladies can walk away grinning, but guys act surprised. I thought I was your man, why'd you leave me, baby? Well, sir, here's a maybe, maybe it's because we can.
What the hell do you mean?
Well, for instance, you get a one you want to fold.
And what else?
You're a fiend, you're tight-fisted. Got no more, I'm only shrug your shoulders, sell your soul to get you sold. But hey, 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 that ain't nothing to do with you. You're a sensitive show, I'm forgetting. But every woman knows. Suppose, just suppose, you're preening in your armchair, and I'm steaming at your name. Go on pontificating like I care. Peter Lorre than a story about ACDC. Harvard educated, frustrated dictator, Harvard with a PhD.
What the hell do you mean?
Well, for instance, you have started every war.
What else?
You're obscene, a coincidence. I get your corners from Tom Warner, who was fornicating foreign shores. But hey, 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 that ain't nothing to do with you. You're a sensitive show, I'm forgetting. But every woman knows. Pretext for 6666 guides you into Oxford. Head still in your box, but your mail, so what did I expect?
What the hell do you mean?
Well, for instance, you committed every rape.
And what else?
I won't heed your insistence. Mr. Populating, copulating, masturbating, denigrating, birth of a nation, instigating, violet of my escape. But hey, that ain't nothing to do with you. You're a sensitive joy, I'm forgetting. But every woman knows it's a pose, just a pose. Heaven knows the world's your hoe, but she's getting too old for your pose. Oh, there she goes.
That's fantastic. Thank you so
Thank
much
you
for doing
so
it.
Much.
Now, Nakai, everybody, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. Nice job. That was great.
Hello?
Hello, Nellie Mackay. Is that you?
Yes, yes, this is me. Yes, thank you.
Hi, it's E.W. Conundrum from Troubadours and Rock on Tours. Thanks for being on the program.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
And before we get started, I'd like to share a little background, if you don't mind, with the folks listening.
Yes, please.
All right, here we go. The New Yorker magazine has described Ms. Mackay as, quote, funny and touching, ceaselessly clever and scarily talented. They also referred to her stage performance as brilliantly subversive. Nellie has indulged an extended run in the award-winning off-Broadway hit Old Hats and has written three acclaimed musical biographies, I Want to Live, the story of Barbara Graham, the third woman executed in the gas chamber at San Quentin, Silent Spring, It's Not Nice to Fool Mother Nature, an exploration of environmental pioneer Rachel Carson, and her latest, A Girl Named Bill, The Life and Times of Billy Tipton, named one of the best concerts of 2014 by the New York Times. She has released five full-length albums, Get Away From Me, Pretty Little Head, Obligatory Villagers, her most recent, My Weekly Reader, and Normal as Blueberry Pie, a tribute to Doris Day that the New York Times called, quote, among the killer overhauls of American standards. Nellie has also won a Theater World Award for her portrayal of Polly Peach in the Broadway production of the Three Penny Opera, and has performed on screen in the films P.S. I Love You and Downtown Express. She has also written the original music for the Rob Reiner film Rumor Has It, and has contributed to the Emmy Award-winning documentary Gasland. Nellie's music has been heard on the TV shows Mad Men, Boardwalk Empire, Weeds, Grey's Anatomy, NCIS, and Nurse Jackie, and she has appeared on numerous TV shows, including The Late Show with David Letterman. Her writing has appeared in The Onion, Interview Magazine, and the New York Times Book Review. Ladies and gentlemen, Nellie Mackay.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
It's pretty impressive. And you're only in your 30s. You're only in your 30s, and you've done all this already. How did this happen? How did you get here?
Well, I padded that resume quite brilliantly, I think. But yeah, it sounds good.
Well, I mean, you live in the Poconos, and you also are out in New York City a bunch of the time. Actually, just got back from New York City just now from a studio session, I understand, and you're on stage, you're producing amazing LPs, and your shows are renowned, your stage performance. I saw one at the Deerhead Inn about a year back, and how did you get into all of this? Where does this come from?
Oh, well, gee, who doesn't want to be in showbiz? So I guess it's, it's partly that. Let's get up and put on a show. And then, you want to change things, and I think that's the biggest thing is, people get so beat down by debt and by responsibility and by the grind, and however they can avoid that, they must. I mean, so many kids when I was, and I say kids means anyone younger than me, when I was knocking doors for Bernie, and they were just, they have so much hope, and they have so much enthusiasm and so much interest in learning, you know, and in seeing the world from different points of view, and how swiftly that is killed in people. And that's the worst death, you know. I mean, Brecht, to paraphrase Brecht, you know, he said, what is killing a man compared to hiring a man? You know, taking his, I paraphrase, but, you know, his lifeblood in exchange for money. And I understand that better and better as the years go by.
Yeah, you know, it's not everyone's good fortune to be doing what they love, or even finding what they love. And
right.
And I, how is, I often ask myself, how does one find that, you know, and is it beaten out of them, as you put it, when they're younger, that sort of sense of who they are, their own voice?
Yeah, well, Rachel Carson, you know, talked about a sense of wonder, and that is systematically beaten out of us as a culture, because capitalism requires that you not only tolerate but even celebrate an ideology in which a tiny percentage of people has the vast majority of the goodies at the top. So in order to do that, to get people to accept that, you have to systematically inundate them with propaganda from cradle to grave, from every direction, in every way you can think of, to get them to support such a system. So part of it is to drive out people's natural creativity and empathy. And they do it very well. And then people wake up one day and they're kind of at a loss for what to do with themselves, or they feel that there's their soul has been deadened, and they perhaps don't realize it's by design, or even if they do, they don't know how to get back to what they had. You know, and how long does anyone's innocence last? I mean, particularly now with the internet and the smartphones, it's very hard.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, when you say they, I'm often wondering myself, you know, who are they, and is it a concerted effort? And when you think, when you say they beat it out of us, or they, you know, want to suppress our creativity and our individuality, who are they in your mind?
Well, I would say they're the people that profit off the system, and those are a very few, and their numbers are getting fewer, So, you know, media is owned by financial interests or people with financial interests, and so media goes to prop up the system. I mean, for instance, the war machine, you know, NBC at the time of the Iraq War was owned by GE, which was involved in weapons manufacturing, and that was never disclosed to people, so it stood to benefit off the invasion of Iraq. But generally, Wall Street is War Street, and so anything that has a moneyed interest links back to the military-industrial complex, and so you have a pretty much entirely, in terms of corporate media, it is pro-war, and so you know, I mean, banks make their money off of war, and war is big business right now, and so, for instance, the Senate overwhelmingly approved $70 billion for Trump for his latest military budget. $70 billion would have covered affordable education, you know, tuition-free public college for those who need it, for every person in this country who needed it. And instead, you know, when you talk about tuition-free public college, you know, people are like, how are you going to pay for it? Well, we can always afford more war, apparently. And this is a majority of Democrats as well as Republicans. There are a few abstainers, including Bernie Sanders, but three of the most likely candidates, Democratic candidates for 2020, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, and Elizabeth Warren, they all voted in favor of this $70 billion towards more death and destruction. And people really need to remember that. And it's the kind of vote that it doesn't even enter the public consciousness, you know?
No.
So it's so difficult because people are so overwhelmed just by their own lives. But to try to keep track of who votes for what and to follow the money and to remember it when the voting time, you know, it's hard enough even just to get enough time off of work to vote. The system is rigged at every level.
Oh, it is. And even if you have the time off to vote from work, do you need an ID? You know, things of that nature as well. You know, there's a lot of disenfranchisement for certain that, you know, always puts the people with less means in the situation of not having their voice heard. I agree with you totally. And when we're talking about the mentality of our fellow citizens, do you think too that our educational system is not up to the level or up to par so that we are independent critical thinkers?
Oh God, no. I mean, it's just it's shameful. Public schools, like libraries, I mean, you see where the money goes and where it doesn't go. I mean, it shouldn't be. Obama gave a speech, I think it was last year, it might have been earlier this year, where he was talking about, teachers spending their own money to buy books and supplies for their students. That's not a bragging point, you know.
No.
That's shameful that in the richest country in the world, that teachers should have to do that, that there's not enough in the school budget. And in fact, I taught recorder and music in a Bronx public school quite a few years ago. And I was having to do the same thing because the kids had to pay something like $5 for their recorder, you know, those little wooden instruments you use in school. And you know, some didn't have it. And I'd have to cover it, and I just thought, this is so stupid. You know, why should you have to, why should the kids have to pay? You know, it's the old postcard, it will be a great day when our schools have all the money they need and the military has to hold a bake sale to buy a bomber.
Yeah, I've seen that postcard. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Now, Noam Chomsky, I heard you kind of refer to follow the money, and... you know, his sort of analysis oftentimes is not what in the general public, indulges in. It doesn't really even know most people that sort of mentality exists out there. And I'm wondering, does art have, and I think this is what you try to do, correct me if I'm wrong, have access to people? Maybe in a way that it could get them to think a little differently, to focus on issues that they might not otherwise.
Well, I think if it was ubiquitous across the arts, I mean, it would help. It devolves into this kind of tribalism, you know. So you see all this kind of reacting to Trump, and it's political infantilism that Trump is a product of the system, you know, and Trump puts a much more honest face on the system in that he looks and sounds like what the system does, what this country has always represented, and whose interest he represents. I think if it's done the right way. It's just tricky because even when, people address, specific issues and it's really right on what they're saying. Thoreau has a quote about for every 1,000, I believe, who are hacking at the branches of evil, there's one who's hacking at the root. And when you look at the root, I mean, it is profit. it's the profit motive, and what holds that in place. It's also our attitudes towards animals. What holds these, helps to keep these things in place? Capitalism, the hideous exploitation and torture of non-human living beings, and the subjugation and misery of humans around the world. What helps keep that in place? Well, a lot of it is politics. I mean, you do have to get political, and in order to get political, you have to challenge this two-party system. You have to challenge individual candidates, and so I look to people like Chris Hedges or Cornel West, who they manage to do it in as non-emotional a way as possible, and they can still get so much flack. But I mean, just as much as you can try to point out the wrongs of the system and the chicanery of the candidates, but you try to do it not in a personal way. And it's very tricky, but you have to go after the whole system. I mean, you can't just campaign against, say, the death penalty without pointing out that both the Democrat and Republican parties support it.
Right, right. And it seems such a daunting task, though, to be able to change a vast majority of our fellow citizens' mindsets. You know, it is such a norm. Everything that right now you're pointing at, and I agree with you, and are critically analyzing as is not the way to be, an unhealthy approach, an unethical approach, immoral approach, is the norm. You know, in most people's minds, and I think often, and maybe you'll disagree, religion justifies it too, to a great extent.
Right.
So if the big guy, of course, in the sky says it's okay, then why would we worry? And you know, your teachers aren't saying it's wrong, and your neighbors aren't really up in arms. How do you change something that's so so ingrained in our DNA, basically? Do you get distraught at times, or do you have a way to stay upbeat, positive, hopeful?
Well, I mean, fear is a great motivator. I mean, it works. You know, I mean, I think I'm less easily manipulated than other people, but of course one is fearful. One is right to be fearful. There's a lot to be afraid of. So it can be hard to have that distance when one feels your immediate interests are threatened. So that does kind of get me down. But I do think that a lot more people are seeing through, and I think there's a coming together of people, across the spectrum. I mean, there's a consensus on a lot of things in this country. I mean, most people in this country think we should cut the bloated, wasteful, and dangerous military budget. Most people think we should have health care, preferably a single-payer system, a nationwide universal health care that covers every person in this country. I mean, there's a lot more consensus than is talked about. It's just that our representatives, our so-called representatives, go against the wishes of their constituents 70% of the time. I mean, it's insane, you know. And so you don't have representation, and more and more people are up in arms against about that. And against that system. And when we were knocking doors, you know, a friend of mine said, you know, just within the primary, he was just saying, it's reaching that tipping point, but not quite enough people, in terms of the closed primaries and the way it was carried out, are doing bad enough. But you know, it's happening soon, because it's happening regardless of who's in power, because the corporations have completely taken over the levers of power in this country. And, you know, I mean, people, they don't have enough to eat, they don't have enough to pay their bills, and that's a growing number of people. And it's just, I'm sorry, I know I'm all over the place here, but I think it's also, it comes down so much to local organizing, and it's such a drag, man.
It's hard. Yes.
But it's got more humanity than, you know, certainly the internet. And I was talking to another friend who's worked with Ralph Nader for many years, and he was saying that even Bernie is a quick fix. And that really resonated with me, because there's a truth to that. I mean, certainly when I would go into communities from out of town, particularly if they were, particularly black community, it was Latino, I found perhaps I've got a little Spanish in me, and but my Spanish is fairly awful. But they were, you know, it was less, I felt less like a gringa. But you know, down south, I felt like a carpetbagger, you know, you know, knocking on people's doors and I, you know, who are you? Who the hell are you? It's just, we've got time now. I mean, there's still so much that is so rotten in this system. We still have the superdelegate system. Bernie has not broken free of the Democratic Party and does not appear to be heading towards starting the third party, which is incredibly disappointing. We need a strong third party so badly. But we do have time to organize as much locally as we can and talk to each other. You know, so I try to do that. And I'm about as antisocial as it gets.
Antisocial, really? You come alive on stage. Let's talk about your music a bit. This is, I love to hear your insight as a fellow citizen. I do, you know, it's inspiring, and you don't feel alone. So thank you for sharing that. And I know people that are listening too want to hear about your art. Yeah, you know, you just came back from the studio tonight, and you're gracious enough to share some more time and energy on the radio program. Tell me, what are you working on?
Oh, well, we were just trying to finish up this album, which should come out in the new year, so that's nice. And, we've been working on a show about Joan Rivers, how Joan Malinsky became Joan Rivers. So just between those two, and, you know, a couple of other irons in the fire, there's always plenty to do.
So the Joan Rivers is going to be a stage production?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, we're kind of, you know, seeing however it can work, but yeah.
And why Joan? You've picked, a couple of significant people, Billy Tipton, and Rachel Carson, Barbara Graham, Joan Rivers. What makes you choose someone to focus on in a piece?
You know, I don't know. I just know, you know, her book, I guess I just really enjoyed it when I was just starting out, and when she died, I kind of thought, how she got there. I don't, you know, I kind of go back and forth. I mean, look, you know, she did have the humor, which, say with the Rachel Carson, one did occasionally feel engulfed by that subject, because you know, it's just hard to make entertaining.
Rachel,
but we tried.
You mean Rachel Carson, the Silent Spring, Afraid of Pesticides and such?
Yeah, we tried to make it a lighthearted look at pesticide poisoning. But I don't know, you know, Joan, and also, you know, there's things, I don't agree with Joan on, and I think just psychologically it's interesting to see why people are the way they are, you know, and often it's rooted in one's childhood. And, it always kind of makes me think of Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane is, yeah, I go there a lot too. Do I mean, how do you look at yourself? Like, who are you becoming?
I don't know. Shirley Chisholm, Bella Abzug. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I love Ralph Nader. You know, I love what Glenn Greenwald's been doing. He's not only, you know, he was in Citizen Four, which is a great documentary if no one's seen it. And, you know, he's done a lot with the surveillance state. And he does a lot around human rights and social justice. And then he also does a lot with animals. You know, he extends his compassion to animals, and he's been putting out more stuff about speciesism and you know, why one should consider the rights of animals, why one should consider their interests and wants and needs. And he recently just started a homeless a shelter for animals in Brazil that is completely staffed by homeless people. So homeless people are helping the homeless animals, and he just understands the connection. So I find him very inspiring. So I don't know. I mean, I'd love to do something like that someday.
So, you know, we hardly have talked about your music and such. Is that not as important to you as a lot of the social causes and ethical debacles in society today to you?
Well, I mean, it's terrible. I just find it very difficult to concentrate. You know, I mean, I just think artists should be the vanguard, you know, not gatekeepers of a status quo that is not only homicidal but suicidal. And the arts, a lot of it nowadays, Deadsville. I mean, it's self-aggrandizement. You know, I don't know. So, yeah. So I mean, it's nice to do both. And I like that the Joan Show deals with censorship, because I really think that's pernicious, and a lot of it's coming from the left nowadays, which fills me with dismay, because the 60s and the free speech movement, it was about liberation, you know, it was about liberation for all, and any liberation movement that embraces censorship is doomed to failure, self-evidently. I mean, they do not mix, and you know, social justice and freedom of speech, they aren't antithetical. They're intertwined. And so I like that we can, you know, get a little of that, not too heavy, but a little bit of that in the Joan with Dick Gregory and Lenny Bruce, like that.
You know, The New Yorker was right. You are brilliantly subversive. You are.
Oh. Oh. Well, you know, yeah. Well, gee.
I meant it as a compliment. Compliment.
I like some of their cartoons every now and then.
Well, do you want to share anything coming up with the listeners that they might check out, whether it be shows or you mentioned your new LP or CD?
We're doing these. It's a preview. It's under construction. These Joan Rivers shows. In New York, they're midnight shows at Joe's Pub this fall. But then we're going to Cleveland. We're going to, I don't know, are your listeners pretty local or are they all over the place?
They're all over the place.
Oh, fantastic. So, yeah, you know, we're going to New Hampshire and Maryland and, you know, we're going to West Virginia in December. That's with Mountain Stage, the radio show. So, yeah, we'll be all over. But I would really encourage people. There was one thing I didn't mention, which is that over half of every tax dollar goes to military and the war machine. And that's not veterans' benefits. Again, you really see where the money doesn't go. Mm-hmm. Of course, we need to take care of veterans. And we should take much better care of them than we do. But it goes, I mean, the reason that our country is crumbling and it's so full of want and hardship is because, and death, you know, people die because 29 million are still uncovered with health insurance under Obamacare. It's because we're spending all this money on creating, you know, this utter horror and cruelty abroad. It's insane. The militarization of our society is insane. So I would love if people would just consider that, because that's your money, you know? And you should have a right to say and demand where your money goes. And then the other thing is there's a great documentary called Cowspiracy. If you go to cowspiracy.com, it's a funny title, a serious subject. I'm sure you know about it.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, if they could check out Cowspiracy, because a lot of people are worried about the climate. We've seen all these storms. You know, it's just getting worse. But that really shows how animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change. And it's good to know, because only, you know, denial was never an effective political tool.
No, never. And I want to mention, too, people could, because you're not going to bill yourself, it seems, your website, I'm going to share now, NellieMckay.com, NellieMckay.com for her shows and some other interesting information. It's wonderful talking with you. Our time is up. I would love to do it again with you. I feel like I'm just starting to get a vibe from you that I could ride a bit. But, you know, I don't want to take any more of your time. And we only have like 25-30 minutes. So how about this? We end our talk with you sharing just one more insight that you'd like to leave our listeners with as we go into the future.
Oh, gee. I would just wear clean socks and I feel like it should be something fun. And I remember potato chips are vegan, so is beer, most beer. A majority of people really want to fight against the surveillance state. And it's really, you know, and this is, again, across party lines. We got to come together because we are living in a turnkey totalitarian state, and that key has already been partly turned. And you know, nobody believes the government should, you know, be able to track your every move, listen to your every phone call, read your every text or email, and they can't now. And it's overwhelming, but you know, we have to somehow stand together against that and support candidates that genuinely, oppose this grotesque over-surveillance of our everyday lives.
Nellie McKay, thank you for talking with us on Troubadours and Rock on Tours, and wish you the best with all the future endeavors. Hopefully we talk again.
You too. Thanks so much for staying up to talk to me.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
You beauty. Okay. Sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams to you too. Take care.
Good night. Bye. You too.
Poor people are poor people, and they don't understand. A man's gotta make whatever he wants and take it with his own hands. Poor people stay poor people, and they never get to see. Someone's gotta win in the human race. If it isn't you, then it has to be me. So smile while you're making it, laugh while you're taking it, even though you're faking it. Nobody's gonna know, nobody's gonna know. No use mumbling, it's no use grumbling. Life just isn't fair. There's no easy days, There's no easy ways. Just get out there and do it. And sing, and they'll sing your song. Laugh while you're getting on. Smile and they'll string along. And nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know. Nobody's gonna know. We all want justice, but you got to have the money to buy it. You'd have to be a fool to close your eyes and deny it. There's a lot of poor people who are walking the streets of my town. Too blind to see that justice is used to do them right down. All life from beginning to end, you pay your monthly installments. Next to health is wealth, and only wealth will buy you justice. There'll always be a fool who insists on taking his chances. And that is the man who believes in true love romances. He will trust and rely on the goodness of human nature. Now a judge will tell you that's a pathetic creature. All life from beginning to end, you pay your monthly installments. Next to health is wealth, and only wealth will buy you justice. Money, justice, money, and justice, money, justice.
The hotel. So many of the landmark buildings of our depressed former coal town are gone now. Two whole blocks, for example, imploded to make way for an enclosed downtown shopping mall that, over the years, suffered the fate of empty storefronts in a new age of retail. Or take the Hotel Casey, built in 1911 by a family of brewers, made rich by selling whiskey, wine, and beer to the thirsty denizens of the area. The hotel was a grand showplace for many years. Entertainers and dignitaries and other muckety-mucks sleeping in its rooms and eating in its restaurants on their brief tours through our town. As the fortunes of the town declined, so did the hotel, and it eventually closed and began falling to pieces like the once vibrant train station up the street. The train station was miraculously rescued, restored, and turned into a hotel. The husk of the Hotel Casey was belatedly and mercifully demolished in 2001. The place holds a parking garage and a now-shuttered faux Irish pub. When I was growing up, the hotel's glory days were long past, like the city itself. Proms and weddings were still held there, and there were many escapades and trysts fondly recalled by the aging citizens, of romps in the rooms, and late nights at the bar, and standing on Lackawanna Avenue and looking up at the sky, and knowing for sure that they would remember this moment forever. There was a Chinese restaurant on the first floor, and my family had a few dinners there. We didn't go out to eat much, and an evening at an Oriental den with its chopsticks and its tiny teacups without handles was the height of exoticism for us. Still, there was a seediness and sadness about the place, as if the fortune in your crumbling cookie might read, "You will die in this town." Lucky numbers, 3, 9, 12. Long before the hotel closed, the building had become shabbier and shabbier, its better days only memories among old-timers and soon-to-be old-timers. After it closed, it became an embarrassment, an abandoned building in the middle of downtown, deteriorating so badly that the sidewalk in front had to be cordoned off, lest a pedestrian be bonked on the head by falling debris. Into this crumbling edifice moved bats and rats and pigeons and bums, those unfortunate homeless men who drank during the day, if they could cobble together the cash for cheap alcohol, and slept in the former luxury hotel at night. Occasionally, if the bum made his way to a spot higher up in the hotel, perhaps on the very same spot a senator or actress once trod, the rotting floorboards gave way, and the bum plunged to his death. Across the street from the hotel was another venerable establishment, also gone now, an Italian restaurant with a history reaching back to Prohibition. The jukebox had Frank Sinatra and Bobby Darin on heavy rotation, and civil servants in cushy jobs at the courthouse a block away bobbed their heads to Beyond the Sea as they downed two or three martini lunches before weaving back to a bleary afternoon at work. Gerald, a busboy at the restaurant, was a sad case. He was developmentally disabled, as they didn't say then, and his parents kept him out of school, and he was never taught to read. The bartender sent him to the basement for cases of beer and would tell him which logos to look for on the case. "Go get me a case of the world, Gerald," he would say, meaning Schlitz. One day, Gerald was loitering on the sidewalk outside the restaurant, and a body fell from the sky. Another unfortunate bum. Gerald screamed and sped into the bar, where he ran round and around, yelling and crying, and disturbing the gin-misted reveries of the civil servants. Before it closed, the hotel had one last famous, or semi-famous, guest. Julie Hayden was hardly a household name. It would no doubt only be recognized by gray-haired theater aficionados. She was, however, a figure in literary and theatrical history. She was the widow of George Jean Nathan, again, now mostly forgotten, but once a famous theater critic. An award is named after him, and he was a colleague of H.L. Mencken. As a young actress, Julie originated the roles of Kitty Duval, the hooker with the heart of gold, in William Saroyan's The Time of Your Life, and of the shy and damaged Laura in The Glass Menagerie. She came to town to play Laura's mother, Amanda, the maddening, memory-played matriarch of the doomed Wingfield family, in a local production of the Tennessee Williams classic. It was a coup for the theater department, and a poignant return to the play for the actress. By this time, Julie had become ethereal and slightly addled, and with her decades of theatrical memories, seemed to have become something of an Amanda in real life. She was a spirit from another time and another world, living, briefly, in a ghostly hotel from another time and another world.
Gonna take a sentimental journey, gonna set my heart at ease, gonna make a sentimental journey to a new old memories. Got my bags, got my reservations, spent each dime I could afford, like a child in wild anticipation, long to hear that all aboard. Seven, that's the time we leave at seven. I'll be waiting up for heaven, counting every mile of railroad track that takes me back. Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? Gonna take that sentimental journey, sentimental journey home. My heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? Gonna take that sentimental journey, sentimental journey home.
I find sanctuary in the idea of the sun rising and the sun setting and the moon going through its cycle too. I am a creature on the planet Earth, as are you, and I try not to lose sight of the simplicity and the often overlooked complexity in that role. There you have it, episode 240 of Troubadours and Rock on Tours. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, the great songwriter, singer, and actress, as well as community activist, Nellie Mackay. I'd like to thank our resident essayist and associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, a.k.a. Uncle Cesare, for all his fine work. I also like to thank these musical artists, Nellie Mackay, Jimi Hendrix, and Cannonball Adderley, as well as Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Terrence Blanchard, and Branford Marsalis, too. Until next week, enjoy this one. Thanks for listening.